and welcome to Radio Shalom. It's Deb Levy here coming to you from Planet FM. Today we are talking about dreams. We have just come to the end of the book of Bereshit, the book of Genesis, which is the first book in the Torah, the five books of Moses. And it's a fascinating book. I've heard it described before as the book of dysfunctional families and what not to do. Because really it's a book that's filled with different stories of what happens when things go wrong. And one of the things I really appreciate about being Jewish and having the Torah in my life is that it's not a glossy book where we have all these heroes and we don't find out anything about what they were really like. Instead, we have these amazing righteous people, and yet they are presented warts and all. We find out all about their faults, about their challenges, about their mistakes, about their trials. And we're presented not just with a history or a story of what happened, but we're presented with tips, tricks, and guides for how to live our lives today and to make sure that we learn from those who have come before us. I love the quote that, you know, you have to learn from other people because you don't live long enough to make all the mistakes yourself. And I really feel like when we read about the different challenges that our forefathers and foremothers went through, we have the opportunity to learn from them so that hopefully we can make better decisions in our lives as well. And one of the themes that we see, particularly in the later part of Bereshit, of Genesis, is this idea of dreams and the power of dreams. And I have to say, on a personal note, I've always been fascinated by dreams because I dream incredibly vividly and almost every night, and I almost always remember my dreams. So I remember from a very young age being intrigued and fascinated by my dreams and often writing them down and trying to understand them. And when we came to the part of the Torah where we start hearing about Joseph and his dreams, this always held particular fascination for me as an avid dreamer and somebody who was intrigued by my own dreams and my own subconscious. And it's very interesting because the Talmud's view on dreams, when the rabbis discuss dreams, they really have a paradoxical approach. On the one hand, we have these dreams that seem to have significance, seem to have meaning. There's, you know, the sages explain that there's always a grain of truth in our dreams. And on the other hand, our sages also explain that we have to be very careful with dreams. And there's always rubbish in dreams as well. And there'll always be some nonsense in dreams. And today we're going to have a chance to take a closer look at some of the different dreams that are featured in Bereshit. And we will see that there always has to be in a dream, according to our sages, some part where there's meaning and there's a little bit of truth, and at least some part where it doesn't make sense. And one of the things that I think for all of us who wake up with that feeling of, you know, what did that mean? What's going on? We can take comfort in the line that Joseph says to the people whose dreams he interprets, where he explains that any interpretation is from God and not from man, not from him. So that even when he's explaining the dreams to the people that he's explaining them to, he acknowledges that any understanding of that is beyond him. And so I want to take that opportunity today too and say, hopefully Hashem, God, will put the right words in my mouth, but definitely, you know, the only one who can really interpret what's going on in our dreams, though, you know, Freud might disagree with me, is Hashem, is God. So to set the scene, many are familiar with the story of Joseph the dreamer. Joseph is born to Jacob, and we come across a dream situation where, it's not a dream situation, it's a situation where he's dreaming, where Jacob is running away from his brother Esau. There's been the whole episode, for those who are familiar, where his mother has helped him to trick his father into stealing the blessing of his brother, and now his brother is angry and wants to kill him, and Jacob is running away. And on one sense, he's running away, but on the other sense, he's running too, because where he's going is to find his wife. And he's in this middle space between running away from his past and running towards his future. And he lies down to sleep and he has a dream. And in his dream, he sees the vision of the ladder, the angels going up and down, and he hears a promise from Hashem. I will guard you wherever you go. I will return you to the land. So he goes to sleep in a worried state, and he wakes up in a state of feeling comforted and of peace. And interestingly, the Midrash explains he goes to sleep, and the word that's used in the Hebrew for the stones is in plural. But when he wakes up, the word that's used in the Hebrew for stone is in singular. So he puts his head on a pile of stones and he wakes up on a single stone. What happened here? The Midrash explains that this is connected to the fact that when he went to sleep, his thoughts were separated and jumbled and conflicted. And when he woke up, they were all one and the same as well. He was at peace. Now, for many of us, we may have the opposite, that we go together in a state of peace and we wake up with all these jumbled thoughts and ideas. But really, what we're seeing through the book of Genesis with these dreams is that ultimately, the dreams bring clarity. Even if not immediately, like it was for Yaakov, even if people wake up distressed and don't understand them, ultimately, through the journey that these people go on with Yosef, their dreams bring clarity. So we know that Yosef is born to a dreamer. His father Yaakov has already experienced prophecy through dream, has experienced connection to Hashem through dreaming. And then we have his favorite son, Yosef, who has these amazing dreams. And for better or worse, he shares those dreams with his brothers. So, for those who are familiar with the story, Yosef's first dream that he shares with his brothers is about binding sheaves in the field, and he's binding the sheaves belong to each of the brothers, and in the end, his sheaves of wheat are bowed down to by his brothers' sheaves of wheat. The sheaves bow down to his sheaf. And he tells his brothers about the dream, and it says in the text, and they hated him more. You know, so we already have a conflicted relationship. He shares his dreaming with them. We wonder about the symbolism of the dream. What does it mean that the brothers' sheaves are bowing down to his sheaf? And then, as if that's not enough, we hear the second dream. So in the second dream, we have the sun, the moon, the 11 stars. And this dream, they're not bowing down to something that represents Yosef. In this dream, they're bowing to Yosef himself, to Joseph. And so we have these two dreams. And what's fascinating, as we go through the Parashat Vayeshev, and we start to see what takes place, we see that both these dreams do have that grain of truth that we were talking about. And also, they have that bit of ridiculousness as well. The grain of truth, yes, ultimately, there will be two rounds of bowing. The first round will mirror the sheaves, and the second round will mirror what happens with the sun and the moon and the stars. But in addition to that, we do have a little bit of something that's impossible. The idea of inanimate objects bowing, this is something that is ridiculous. And so even though the symbolism is real, the metaphor of the sheaves bowing shows us something that's impossible by nature. We would never have inanimate sheaves bowing to each other. So we see both elements that the Talmud talks about, of something that is absolutely truth and something that is real in your dream and something that is a bit ridiculous. So after these dreams and the relationship deteriorates between the brothers, ultimately the brothers take Yosef. They initially are going to kill him. Instead, they throw him into a pit, and ultimately they sell him as a slave. And Yosef goes down to Egypt as a slave. Interestingly, God is still with Yosef. Hashem is still with Yosef. We read about the way in which he is carried down to Egypt as a slave. He's carried down with people who sell spices. And this is interesting because normally, if we're looking at traders in that part of the world, it wasn't usual that they would necessarily be carrying something sweet smelling. And yet for each of us, we talked last week about suffering. For each of us who experience suffering in our lives, the Jewish belief, Hashgacha Pratit, divine providence, that everything is from Hashem, is the idea that we only have the amount of suffering that we need for that particular experience and no more. For Joseph, yes, he was to be sold as a slave. But if he was going to be sold as a slave and taken down to Egypt, God forbid he should have a bad smell. Hashem orchestrated everything that at least he would have a pleasant smell on his journey down to Egypt. And that's part of the beautiful relationship that we see between Joseph and Hashem. Through all the trials, through all the tribulations, through all the challenges that Joseph goes through, he never once complains to Hashem. He never once questions Hashem. He never once loses his faith or the strength of relationship. He understands it's all from Hashem and ultimately it's all for good. And this, in terms of suffering, is of huge comfort. We spoke last week about Viktor Frankl and the message of finding meaning in suffering. For Yosef, he understood that all of his suffering was filled with meaning because whichever way Hashem was leading him, whichever pathway he had to go on, it was ultimately for his benefit and would ultimately be for good. And of course, for those of us reading the story, we know that how low Yosef had to sink in order to climb so high. But remember, for Yosef at the time, yes, he had the dreams where ultimately he hoped he would rise, but he didn't know what would happen. And he had to trust. He had to have faith. He had to trust in Hashem. So we find Yosef in Egypt. He rises to the head of the household of Potiphar. Potiphar's wife accuses him, even though she's the one trying to seduce him. She accuses him of trying to have his way with her, and he is thrown into prison. And again, it's interesting with Yosef. We always see the dreamer rising like a little bubble, right? We see him in Potiphar's household. He's risen to the top position. We see him now in prison. He's given the leadership role. He rises to the top position. He's appointed over the other prisoners. And ultimately, we'll see him rise in Egypt as well and as part of the administration. And for Joseph in prison, he develops this reputation, a really good reputation while he's in prison. And we read that two of Pharaoh's servants are thrown into jail. And here's where we have the next set of dreams in the story. They've both had disturbing dreams. And what's very interesting is each has not just dreamt his own dream, but the commentators explain each dreamt the dream of the other as well. And Yosef says he can explain their dreams, but he makes very clear that actually he's not interpreting the dream. Hashem is interpreting the dream. Only Hashem can interpret a dream. And this is part of Yosef's humility as well, and part of him indicating to the others that there's a difference between him and the other dream interpreters at the time. Because dream interpretation was something that was very big in a big practice at the time. And we hear that many of Pharaoh's advisors are trying to interpret his dream and giving different interpretations, and they aren't sufficient. They don't ring true to Pharaoh later on when we hear about his dreams. But for now, let's stick with the cupbearer's dream and the baker's dream. The cupbearer, just in the interest of time, but the cupbearer's dream is that it ultimately it seems positive that he will be restored to his post, and the baker's dream ultimately is negative, that he will not be restored to his post. And we don't have time to go in today to the details of the dream, but what happens is that when we flash forward, the cupbearer absolutely is restored to his post, as Joseph says, and the baker is sentenced to death, as Joseph says. And when they leave prison, Joseph has asked the cupbearer to remember him, to put in a good word for him for Pharaoh. And yet he doesn't. It's only once we reach the final set of dreams that we're going to talk about, which are the dreams of Pharaoh, that the cupbearer remembers Joseph. And at that point, he explains to him, when I was in prison, there was a Hebrew slave there. He interpreted my dream. He interpreted the baker's dream. Both of them came to fruition. Maybe he can interpret your dream as well. From all of this, we see every dream has its purpose. And the dreams of Pharaoh are to completely change the direction of the people of Israel. In order for the people of Israel to come to Egypt and ultimately to be enslaved in Egypt, which is unfortunately what needs to happen in order for them to go so low that they can then journey so high to receive the Torah, it's essential that not just Yosef comes down to Egypt, because we understand he had to come down to Egypt. The method of him being sold by a slave coming there, that was part of the journey that to take the Jewish people down to Egypt, and that ultimately they would go up to Mount Sinai and receive the Torah. Yeah, a big low in order to get to a big high, that momentum. But it's not just Yosef who needs to be there. The whole family, the whole tribe of Yaakov, right? Yaakov, who's renamed after, is renamed Israel. The people of Israel, Yosef and Yaakov, everybody needs to go down to Egypt, and ultimately the Jewish people need to be enslaved in Egypt. So, how is the rest of the family going to be brought to Egypt? And this is what we find out in the dreams of Pharaoh. So, when Pharaoh shares his dreams with Yaakov, it's very interesting when you look at the text of the Torah. Yeah, we go back to the Hebrew, back to the original text, because there's a message. Our sages teach us that no word in the Torah is superfluous. Every word that's there has meaning and significance, and there's not even a letter that is wasted. So when we see Yosef and Pharaoh in this situation where Pharaoh is recounting his dream, we have a different text from the first time that we read about the dream, when Pharaoh wakes up and has had the dream himself. The texts don't match. Now, there are different Jewish commentators who have spoken about this. For example, the Ramban, the Nachmanides, doesn't see too much significance in the difference between the texts. In contrast, we have Rashi and the Ramban, the Maimonides, great rabbis who see huge significance in the different words and the different ways in which the dream is represented. And one of the understandings of this is that Pharaoh was a smart man, and he was very sick of people trying to explain his dreams in different ways that didn't make sense to him. He had seen in his dreams animals emerging from the Nile. There were the skinny animals and there were the large animals, and then the skinny animals had consumed the large animals, but they hadn't changed size. And he wanted to know what the meaning of that was. And he had been given different interpretations by his advisors, the Midrash explains, and none of them had been satisfactory, none of them had resonated with them. And so when it came to explaining his dream to Joseph, he deliberately changed some details, added things in, omitted other things. He wasn't just searching for an explanation to his dream. He was also testing Yosef. And to his astonishment, Yosef corrected, the Midrash explains, Yosef corrected the mistakes that he made. And in addition to correcting the mistakes that he made, Yosef was also able to offer an interpretation that in his heart Pharaoh knew to be true. And the interpretation was about the years of plenty and the years of famine that would follow. And that enabled Pharaoh to adequately prepare for this time, to help Egypt to not only survive the famine because they had created storehouses and stashed away food for the difficult times, but also to increase its power and wealth, because all the surrounding nations would then need to come to Egypt for food. And what more did it do? So we come back to our point. How did the Jewish people end up in slavery in Egypt? The whole family of Israel, of Yaakov, needs to come to Egypt. And they too will be affected by the famine. And they too will have to come down to Egypt in search of food. And what we'll see is that ultimately Yosef's dreams, yeah, Yosef the dreamer, his dreams will come true. His brothers will bow down before him. And ultimately the rest of his family will come. And he will be a leader. So how do we get there? For those who are familiar with the story, you'll know it well. Pharaoh says, I need somebody to lead me through this famine. Yosef is put in the position second only to Pharaoh. He runs the entire operation. There are storehouses, food is kept. He's then in charge of distributing the food when people come and need it during the years of famine. And ultimately, he does so with his brothers as well. This man who was just a dreamer, has risen to the second highest post in Egypt. And interestingly, not only has he risen to a place where his brothers are bowing down to him, but he's also risen to a place where he has the ability to look after them, to feed them, to support them, and to take away their guilt as well. One of the beautiful things we see in the scene where Yosef is reunited with his brothers is that he takes the opportunity to explain this concept that we spoke about, Hashgacha Pratit, divine providence, that everything is from Hashem. He's able to comfort the brothers by showing them, you see, this needed to happen. Because how can we understand otherwise that such righteous men, you know, we read about how righteous these brothers are, and yet they could do something so despicable as to sell their brother into slavery. And yet we understand that these events had to take place. Now, the commentators explained that in some ways the brothers were acting in a way that was beyond their control. That because of what needed to take place, their hearts were hardened to their brother and they behaved in this way. Because otherwise, I mean, it's very hard for us to understand how such righteous men could behave in such a way. You know, but there are times where we do read about Hashem taking away someone's free will. And interestingly, generations later, when we have a new pharaoh, yeah, a pharaoh who enslaves the people of Israel, who chooses not to remember Joseph and the role that Joseph played in saving his entire kingdom, and that he wouldn't have been in power without him. You know, Egypt would not have survived the famine necessarily without Yosef. Then he enslaves the people. Hashem also takes away Pharaoh's free will. You know, we read about how through the series of the plagues and everything, that Pharaoh's heart was hardened. These are the words that are used. And this is another example of where Hashem takes away free will. Which is interesting, because one of the ultimate principles that we live by is that as human beings, we have free choice. And we do up until a point. But if ultimately something needs to happen in which our free choice is taken away, or we need to, we've behaved in such a way that we've lost the merit of free choice, that Hashem's hardened our heart or taken away free choice, then we see a different pattern of events. So I want to finish up by talking about what all of this means for us today as dreamers ourselves, yeah? Very often, we may experience a dream that we find difficult or disturbing and we don't know how to make sense of it. And the first thing I want to say is that we can already prepare ourselves before we go to sleep. There's a beautiful prayer in the bedtime Shema, the last prayer that a Jewish person says before they go to sleep, where we actually acknowledge that dreams can be disturbing and we ask for a bit of protection as we sleep. So this is the Hamapiel prayer, and it says, Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, who cast the bonds of sleep upon my eyes and slumber upon my eyelids. May it be your will, Hashem, my God, and God of my forefathers, that you lay me down to sleep in peace and raise me erect in peace. May my ideas, bad dreams, and bad notions not confound me. May my offspring be perfect before you, and may you illuminate my eyes lest I die in my sleep. For it is you who illuminates the pupil of the eye. Blessed are you, Hashem, who illuminates the entire world with his glory. For many of us, saying a prayer like this is incredibly comforting before going to sleep, because sleep is a time when we are vulnerable, not just physically vulnerable, but like it says in the prayer, vulnerable to our own bad ideas, bad dreams and bad notions. And they can be something that confounds us, that can make us feel troubled. And so to take a moment and to actually calm ourselves before we sleep, to take a deep breath and to put it just in the hands of Hashem or the universe, depending on, you know, what your ideology is, and to go, I'm going to calmly sleep, and I'm going to leave this in the hands of a power bigger than myself, can be incredibly comforting for some people as well. So what about after the fact? We wake up in the morning, we've had a dream, it's either confusing or disturbing or we don't understand it in some way. How do we deal with that? For regular Radio Shalom listeners, we've spoken in the past about how the first thing we say when we wake up is Modeh Ani, thank you Hashem, to wake up with gratitude. So that's the first step, regardless of how disturbing our dream may have been or what might have happened during the night, to wake up and say thank you. Secondly, to remember the paradox that we get in the Talmud, that every dream has a drop of truth and every dream has a drop of the ridiculous. So that can help us as well to not take our dreams too seriously, but if there's something that resonates with us in our dreams, to pay attention to that as well. And the third thing that we can do is actually, if we look into Jewish mysticism, into the Kabbalah, there is actually a special prayer that you can say after you've had a particularly disturbing dream, where you take two other close friends and together you say a special prayer to remove any of that bad feeling, any of that harm, and to restore a feeling of being at peace and being okay. And I love the idea that with this particular prayer, you don't do it alone. You take two friends. It doesn't even say take two people, take two strangers. It says take two friends. There's an acknowledgement that yes, being a dreamer can be an amazing thing. Our dreams can be filled with messages, can be filled with insight, can even be filled with just creativity and entertainment. But our dreams can also be disturbing as well. And so it's really important that we have mechanisms to deal with when things disturb us. And the message that I take away from that, and that I hope our listeners take away as well, is whether it's in your waking hours or in your sleeping hours, if there's something that's bothering you, if there's something that's on your mind, if there's something that's disturbed you in any way, you are not alone. Not just are we blessed to have a God who watches over us, but also there are people in our lives who care about us, and that we should be able to call them, to pick up the phone or to see them in person and make sure that we don't deal with this alone. If there's anyone who's listening today and is feeling like they are alone or they don't have somebody to talk to, we have fantastic services in New Zealand where you can just call up and be listened to and be heard. I definitely recommend Lifeline if you're an adult, or Kidsline if you're a child, to just get the support that you need, and otherwise to turn to the people in your life that you love. So keep on dreaming and try not to be too disturbed by those dreams. Thank you for listening to Radio Shalom. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee. And you can tune in and hear this again, share it with a friend, or listen to our other recordings at www.planetaudio.org.nz/radioshalom.